From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The latest Disney Marvel superhero blockbuster has all the hallmarks of recent such films: breathtaking scenery, exciting car chase scenes, well-timed humor, and perfectly sculpted actors in spandex. But the film Black Panther, featuring an ensemble cast of characters from Forrest Whitaker to Lupita Nyong'o, is unlike anything that Hollywood has ever produced. A nearly all-black cast in an action film, a black director, a storyline that covers Pan-African politics from the African continent to urban America, tons of screen time for powerful female characters, and a superhero leader unlike any other. The Twitter hashtag Wakanda Forever, referencing the fictional African nation of Wakanda, where most of the film is set, offers a glimpse of the hunger there is not just in Black America, but the nation as a whole, for stories that are centered around characters other than white men. The film is directed by Ryan Coogler, whose credits include Fruitvale Station and Creed. Released not coincidentally during Black History Month, Black Panther has already broken box office records just days after its release, and today we'll examine just why the film is so historic. With my guest, Stephanie Abraham, a writer and media critic. She helped found the feminist magazine Makeshift. She was a founding editor of the feminist magazine Loudmouth, and her works have been published in McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, and Bitch magazine. And she is our pop culture correspondent and film critic. Welcome to the program, Stephanie.
Thanks, Sonali. It's good to be back.
So we don't usually discuss such mainstream Hollywood films as Black Panther. In fact, we've never discussed any of the Marvel superhero films. And I usually might watch these films kicking and screaming when my comic book loving husband drags me to watch them. But this time around, I dragged him to watch it. And I'm wondering, you know, just what your initial general impressions were. For me, it was a film unlike anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, this film is really interesting. It's beautifully shot. The score is incredible. The acting's superb. I mean, just visually watching it is stunning. And then, you know, it's almost, as you said, an all black cast. I think there's two white characters that have speaking lines, and they're minor roles. And then the script is very well written. It's really thoughtfully done. It's imaginative, but it also has a lot of political threads through it. And it's just quite stunning. And people globally, not only just Black Americans, all over this world, people are going crazy for it, to be honest. It's set all sorts of records, including, you know, I think it raked in over 300 million globally. And actually, it opened in 48 foreign territories, which is pretty unusual for a Black film. But Disney put out all their marketing stops, and it has not opened in Russia, China, or Japan, which are huge markets. So the number that's going to bring in globally is going to be even higher than what it is today.
Right. So domestically, the box office records that have been broken are pretty amazing. This film rivals, you know, such films as Star Wars, you know, the biggest films that we've seen. And even for films directed by African Americans, such as Straight Outta Compton, which was the other breakout success that was by a black director featuring a mostly black cast, this film beat that. Let's talk about some of the reasons why. The fact that this was set in a fictional country in Africa named Wakanda, does it to you offer an example, a sort of symbolic example of what any number of African countries could have been had they been able to save or protect their natural resources from colonizers?
Yeah, and I think that's why it's speaking not only to African heritage people in the U.S., but also on the continent, because it shows, and it even uses words like colonialism, it shows what a kingdom could be if they had been able to, as you said, maintain their resources. So a meteor hit their homeland, their country, and they have the strongest metal in the world. And from that, they've created the most outrageous and incredible technology that you can even imagine. At one point, this woman kind of the technological savviest person heal someone's spine in like a matter of seconds. So it's just, it's really marvelous. So I think part of what is going on is that there's not only the cultural kind of beauty and importance of it, but it's also a fun superhero story. So it's appealing to people of all backgrounds and for lots of different reasons.
Right. Let's talk about the role of women in the film. The person you just referenced is the character of Shuri, who is the sister of the Black Panther, who is the leader of Wakanda. So Shuri, played by a breakout star named Letitia Wright, she is this very sort of physically slight person. She's petite. But she's funny, and she is what seems to be their sort of top tech wizard in the country. This seems to be, you know, whenever you have the James Bond films, there's always a scene where James Bond goes in and ups his gear, gets the latest and greatest tech toys. So there's a scene like that in Black Panther, except the person who's creating these toys and putting them out is this young Black woman, an image we just don't see in Hollywood.
Well, that's the thing, Sonali, is this show, this movie is showing us image after image of things that have never before been seen. So, you know, she's also Panther's younger sister. So she has kind of a sass when she interacts with him, which is really sweet. But she's also like this tech that is just incredible. And then one of the early scenes is his love interest, played by Lupita Nyong'o, she's a spy, and she's on mission in Nigeria, you know, trying to free a group of young women. So it's just like step after step, it's like things that regular representation we're just not seeing. And it's really a welcome difference.
Now, we did review Wonder Woman on this program, and we talked about how that film broke boundaries. But I feel when it came, and that film was anticipated for breaking boundaries for women's representation in film, I feel like Black Panther did a much better job of representing women in film than even Wonder Woman. For example, Black Panther's right-hand man, quote-unquote, in this case is a right-hand woman, a general, female general played by Dania Gurira, who was an incredible character. What do you think about the representation of women overall as it compares especially to Wonder Woman?
You know, I'm really glad you brought this up. I'm not seeing a lot of people comparing the two films, but there are some similarities. For example, their homelands are both hidden from the outside world. And there are women who fight, right? But one of the things that bored me about Wonder Woman was I felt like the representations were really traditional in terms of all of the women who were fighters. Even though they were incredible fighters, they could have been on a runway. They were really sexy, very beautiful, lots of skin showing. And in this case, it's not like that. So I feel like it is breaking boundaries for women in new ways. For example, this general character who you said, she's amazing. She's so strong. And we don't have to see her body to believe that she has power.
And there's a really interesting conversation around hair and her in particular. She is bald. She has a shaved head in this film, as do many characters. And in one scene, in order to disguise herself, she has to wear a wig.
Yeah, that's right. So all of her warriors are women and they're all bald. And the hair in this film is really we could have a whole discussion on that. It's being very commended for it. It's all natural. And so she goes undercover. They go to Korea for kind of to catch this bad guy.
Let me just pause right here for a second. We may let some spoilers slip for those of you who haven't watched the film yet. So if you're really eager to watch the film and you're really worried about spoilers, maybe tune out now and come back to the story after you watch the film. Go ahead, Stephanie.
I'll try to minimize the spoilers. But just to speak about her wig. So she has to wear a wig to go undercover because they go into this casino. And she's like, this is disgusting. It's like, she's just so repulsed by having to wear it. And Lupita's character says, like, just sway it, which I think is a reference to a really popular song right now. Huh. And so as soon as she can in the scene, when they start to fight, she takes her spear. Her spear like pops out somehow. It's amazing. And she starts doing all of this. It's really like choreographed so beautifully. And like she's so powerful with this spear. And she takes her wig off and she throws it in the face of one of the guys who's coming at her. So that
she turns it into a weapon.
That alone is so representational of like, you know, rejecting the colonizer and certain standards of beauty that have been put on African heritage people. So, and that scene is really, really powerful. She's in this red dress and it's very flowy. And so she like flips and does all this amazing choreography, but it's about her power. It's not about her body power, but about her strength in her body power. So That's just talking about that representation of women. Like they didn't have to go cheap, you know, like in Star Wars, if you think about Princess Leia in the original, like the third film, which I guess now is the ninth film, I think, when she was like the slave to Jabba, you know, she was in that terrible, like
the metal bikini scene.
Yeah. There was just none of that. Actually they made a decision to honor, lots of different tribes. I think there were three main tribes, from the African continent that were kind of inspired. And so they made the costumes based on their traditional, wear, their garb, and as well as the makeup and, hair stuff. And also they were speaking different languages from Africa. They say that Wakanda would probably be in West Africa near Nigeria. But one of the languages, like the general, I believe she speaks the language from South Africa. And in South Africa, actually, they had a huge opening too.
The film Black Panther did. And so, yes, so just to, by the way, go through for those people who aren't aware of the female characters, Lupita Nyong'o, of course, from 12 Years, famous for her role in 12 Years a Slave, plays the sort of love interest of the Black Panther, but she's a spy and a fighter in her own right. The sister, Shura, is the tech wizard, the Black Panther's sister. And then Black Panther's general is played by Denia Gurira, this powerful female warrior who leads other female warriors. But then you've got Black Panther's mother, played by the incredible Angela Bassett. There is no shortage of female characters. The male characters are interesting as well. Chadwick Boseman, of course, playing Black Panther. But then you've got people like Forest Whitaker, and the cast of this film was incredible. And of course, I think we can probably credit Ryan Coogler, the director, for putting together such an incredible cast, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone's saying like they basically have whatever film they want at their fingertips. There's also a really interesting for their next project. There's an interesting discussion for the people behind the scenes too, like the makeup artists, like the hairstylists, like the costume designers, that not only are people of color on screen, they're also behind the scenes, and they can basically choose whatever project they want to do next because of just what a good job they did.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the role that Michael B. Jordan plays. In fact, he had played Oscar Grant in the film Fruitvale Station that Ryan Coogler first directed, which is where I had first, you know, found both Jordan and Coogler's work and was just so impressed by that film. Completely different film than Black Panther, of course, about a day in the life of Oscar Grant, the young man who was killed by a BART police officer in Oakland, California. Both Coogler and Michael B. Jordan, I believe, are from Oakland. And the film's American counterpart to Wakanda is the opposite of Wakanda. It's Oakland, one of the centers of urban America, if you will, a very important place culturally for Black Americans. And what did you make, Stephanie, of the juxtaposition of the sort of oppression that Black Americans have faced in the U.S. as we see in Oakland versus what could have been in this continent of Africa in this fictional country of Wakanda?
It's a very interesting juxtaposition. There's a conversation going on Twitter kind of comparing the characters to Malcolm and MLK. So really, don't they have the same mission at heart?
But and you're talking about the Black Panther versus Killmonger, which is the role that Michael B. Jordan plays.
Right, yeah, the two men.
Or the sort of two protagonists, yeah.
Yeah, one coming from Oakland, Michael B. Jordan's character, even though in real life, I think he's from there as well, but yeah, him compared to the king, who's the Black Panther, the new king. So there's like this wealth, and Michael B. Jordan's character is challenging that wealth in Wakanda and saying, how could you let us live with this poverty? Why don't you share your resources with the world? And then there's the other idea of like, no, we need to protect them because we need to protect our people. So there's a question of like identity and Pan-Africanism and even the role of slavery and who initially sold people into slavery. There's kind of a thread of like, how could you have done this to us? And it's really, really powerful. It's something I've never seen before, particularly not in this type of representation, this type of like, it's a superhero film. You know, it's not a heavy film about that. And so to see all of these different threads running through it is part of why it's so successful. Disney's choice to allow Ryan Coogler this artistic room, really, to have his artistic vision seen was really a good choice that's paying off for them in profits, but it's also paying off in terms of leading the way in new representation.
Right. And of course, we cannot have a discussion about the film Black Panther without bringing up the Black Panther Party. Oakland, which we're just discussing, where the film is set, has some scenes in, and where the film's character Killmonger, played by Michael B. Jordan, is from, is of course also where the Black Panther Party had one of its strongest chapters. And that iconic photograph of Huey Newton sitting in this throne-like chair was seen not just, I think, once, but several times during the actual film, right? I mean, it was a very deliberate nod to that power and that sense of royalty that Huey Newton invoked in some of the kind of advertising, if you will, or that the Black Panther Party did for itself.
Yeah, for sure. There's no question. I've seen clips online that show the real kind of juxtaposition or in putting the picture
Our TV audience can see the side by side right now.
Okay, yeah. So you can see how clearly it's obvious. It's an obvious mimic. Now, you know, does Disney want to promote the Black Panther Party? No, but that they can kind of commodify this image and have it be so well accepted is really interesting. It's a risk that is currently paying off. Mm-hmm.
And of course, there is a character who is a member of the CIA in the film. You mentioned the two white characters that have speaking roles, played by Martin Freeman, who plays the role of a CIA officer, and Andy Serkis, who I think is very convincing as this white South African villain. The two of them are actually, it's interesting, first of all, that we're talking about a film where the white guys are the token white guys in the film, but they do a remarkable job. They actually play fantastic characters, right?
Yeah, I think they're both non-USers, which is interesting as well, that the two white, I know Martin is, I think Andy is as well, so that they're not from the US, and they have small roles, which is surprising. Like, there is no white savior in this film. Like, what a relief. It's so unusual, unfortunately.
Right. One of them does play the role of someone who assists the effort, but, he assists in the effort rather than saves everybody.
Me, I have to say that the CIA guy is like kind of a good guy in the end, but he doesn't take over, and he's not the hero. So that is different.
And in the nitpicking section of our review, we can take issue with the fact that the CIA is portrayed so positively. And some people have taken issue with that. I mean, the CIA isn't. This is one CIA officer who's portrayed positively, right?
Yeah, it's true. But then
we don't want to spoil it for.
We have a spoiler alert. You put me on my.
Sorry.
It's good.
Let's also talk about how the politics of the film in many ways are so relevant today. Had this film been made 5 years ago, it may not have had the impact it's having today. How do you set this film in our current political moment, in the Donald Trump era, in the era where Black Lives Matter is a powerful political force?
It's a really important question. And, you know, cultural studies scholars, media scholars say that media in particular reflects the culture in such a powerful way. And the culture is like a fishbowl, okay? It's the water and we're the fish inside it. So we can't really tell it's moving through us. And most people just absorb representations without critically thinking about it. And then we have a moment like this where it really is like a smart representation and people are starting to think critically about it. So to answer your question more directly, this would never have flown 5 years ago. It's specifically because there's a cultural moment where we're seeing a worldwide effort of, you know, black movement, Black Lives Matter, and that's becoming more mainstream. Also, the 99% movement, and Me Too has a lot to do with it. The Oscars so white. I think all of those things combined have set the stage for Disney to pull this off in a mainstream way. Otherwise, I don't think it would have been so powerful. In fact, Patrice Kahn-Colors, one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matters, she wrote an article about this for Glamour, of all places, recently. I think it came out last week, where she said that this is a defining cultural moment and this is a defining cultural film.
And the reason, of course, why we're talking about this film and why it is so important is that representation matters. And there was a lot of hype around the film before it came out. The trailer was released months ago. The posters were up months ago. I want to actually play a little clip for you and our audience, Stephanie, of a reaction between that a couple of Black moviegoers had when they simply saw the poster for Black Panther. The video of their reaction went viral. But to me, it says so much. Here's a short clip of a viral video about how a group of Black friends reacted when they saw just a poster for Black Panther.
Like, all the time?
So we sitting here looking at this dope ass Black Panther poster, and the conclusion that we have
all
come
the time?
To is that this is what white people get to feel all the time.
All the time! All the time!
Since the beginning of cinema.
All the time!
You get to feel empowered like this and represented.
This is what y'all feel like all the time? I would love this country too.
I would love this country too, says one of the people in this short video that was taken by his friend when they encountered the poster of this film and said, this is how white people feel all the time when they see themselves in movie posters. And Stephanie, you and I, neither of us are Black, but I too felt, as watching this film personally on a very deep level, that it was critical for all people of color to see themselves up on the screen in ways that are not stereotypical, in ways that do not take our agency, in ways that give us voice, and in ways that show us to be powerful agents of change. Representation matters, right?
No, absolutely. It really does. And this isn't just a powerful film for Black people. It's for all people of color. I think that's why that video went viral, because there is a sense of like, and the thing with whiteness is that it's just accepted as the norm. So the problem is that most white people don't even realize they're white. They think of other people as the other, right? But in order to really break that down, we need to bring it out. And so that was what was part of what was so powerful about that short clip, is that it's calling out the normalcy that white Americans or white folks globally get to live with, that privilege. That's what the privilege is, that you just see yourself on all these movie posters, for as one example, and think nothing of it, that you see yourself reflected back on from the TV, from the films, from like everywhere you look, right? And so this film is an example of that. And people are actually saying things like, how can I go back to work? I've seen some Black folks on Twitter and stuff like, what am I supposed to do now that I've experienced Wakanda? How can I deal with the colonizer in the workplace? What do I do with these white people who are like so rude? How do I keep myself, you know, quiet instead of like fighting back, instead of like using the agency I know I deserve?
So and it's amazing that a Hollywood film could invoke such reactions. But I mean, to Disney and to Hollywood in general, this should also signal You can make money if you represent us. You've literally lost profits because you've excluded us for so long.
No, and that's what this film is showing. So I have a feeling, Sonali, that maybe in the future we're going to be able to talk about things in film besides like the racism and the sexism, which is what we usually end up having to talk about. So this it's a really exciting moment.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. And we hope to have you back on. It's going to be hard to top for Hollywood to top Black Panther, but we'll see. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Stephanie Abraham is a writer and media critic, and she helped found the feminist magazine Makeshift. She was a founding editor of Loudmouth. Her works have been published in McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, and Bitch magazine. She actually just reviewed Patrice Cahn-Cullors' new book in the LA Review of Books. She's also the pop culture correspondent and film critic for Rising Up with Sonali. We've been discussing Black Panther. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.